Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another great interview in the Upheaval to Uplevel interview series. We are bringing you stories of courage, hope, and awe. Every interview I have done has brought me into deep gratitude and inspired me to live bigger. I'm so happy to bring these to you. I have with me today Terry Healy. He is a cancer survivor who endured over 30 surgical procedures in an effort to reconstruct his face, which was disfigured by a fibrosarcoma when he was only a junior at UC Berkeley. Through a long and arduous process, Terry realized that the scars on the inside had become far more disfiguring than the scars on the outside ever were. Today, at the age of 52, over 30 years after becoming disfigured, Terry is a professional speaker, author, businessman, and many other things we're going to learn about today. So the title of Terry's talk is Navigating Life's Roadblocks, Attitude, Focus, and Teamwork. So thank you, Terry, for being here, and welcome.
Thanks, Jean, for the nice intro.
It's so nice to have you here. We got to talk briefly the other day, and now we're just going to dive in. I love this idea that you have been talking to us about overcoming the scars on the inside and how they can be even harder. I mean, it had to be very hard at such a young age to have a disfiguring event, whatever it was, on your face. You can't hide those, like so many of the things that happen to us in life we can hide. So tell us more about that, if you would.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it had to do with probably the age. So I was 21 years old when I was confronted with this disfigurement, and I think that when you're in a hospital dealing with this and you're surrounded by medical professionals, you don't really get the full understanding of how the world's going to respond to you because they see so much of this all the time, at least where I was at UC San Francisco. So I sort of felt like I was okay. And then when I actually left, when I was released from the hospital and I was in the waiting room waiting for my parents to come pick me up, I had to wait there in the waiting room, and for the first time that's when I noticed all these people staring, pointing. And then there was a few kids that were actually giggling at me, and that's really when I began to notice that, you know, the severity of the situation that I was dealing with, and I hadn't really grasped it at that point. And I think that was sort of the first point at which I realized, man, I'm actually worse than I thought. And I think, unfortunately, because of my age, I was very sensitive, very aware of and concerned about appearances, right? Having been sort of the homecoming prince. Prior to that, it things had come easy, and suddenly it was very different. And at that point, that's when I started to kind of spiral down, and it was really over the course of the next 6 years that what I thought was really my appearance being the problem and the source of sort of my insecurity, what I realized was, you know, I had become somebody else on the inside. I was very disfigured on the inside. And it was a whole transformational life experience over many years that taught me that, you know, you have to rebuild yourself from the inside in order to, overcome that. And so that's kind of the story.
Yeah. So, gosh, people and kids—they're so what is the word? Innocent, open,
curious,
whatever.
Yeah.
Curious. Yeah. They haven't learned to lie yet, socially or whatever. And but to be pointed at and laughed at. And you were what, 19, something like that?
I was 20, 21. Yeah.
20. Yeah, right in that age where you're just stepping out into the world in your own way, and to have it be greeted that way. So, what was the turning point for you? I mean, you gave it to us in a nutshell, but was there something that kind of woke you up that just went, oh, my?
Yeah, there really was. And I would say it kind of, and I don't know how much time you want me to go into this because it's kind of a longer story, but there's a lot of context around it.
Sure, just share it with us. I'd love to hear
it. And there was really probably four major turning points in my life that I think about that I remember really well, but I'd say the most significant one, which I would really call the most liberating of all my turning points, was when I was going back and forth to Chicago to have a series of six reconstructive procedures in an effort just to make my nose symmetrical. So out of all those 30 procedures, this was one surgeon that was going to spend, you know, the course of 18 months trying to fix my nose. And as I went back and forth to Chicago, it was sort of a difficult process because I wasn't making a lot of – I didn't feel like I was improving much in terms of my appearance. But on that last final trip, I met this girl named Dina in the hospital. And to give you some background, you know, the whole idea was, let's just try to focus on making your nose symmetrical again. So I go back there for this final procedure, expecting something really magical to happen, and I thought everything would come together. When I was able to get out of bed after that last procedure, I just remember getting up, going into the bathroom, all excited to look at myself in the mirror. And when I looked, I was so disappointed. I was devastated because I realized this was my last shot. And I had new scars on my forehead that they had to create in order to pull tissue down. I had new scars on my cheek, created an effort to reconstruct my upper lip. And I really felt like I had been taking many steps back for every step forward. So I sunk. That was at the point, and I'm getting to the turning point, but that was the point that I probably sunk to the newest low I had had to date. So I'm walking down the hallway, and I meet this girl named Dina. Dina's a patient in the hospital my age. Mm-hmm. So we get to know each other in the hospital, and believe it or not, it turned into a relationship. And shortly thereafter, you know, it became an intimate relationship. And I say that only because it was significant, Janine, sure. In that it was the first time that I'd been with someone that didn't know me as the old Terry. But after spending this long weekend together, she looked at me, and this was after spending a fair amount of time together, but she looked at me and she just said, you know, you have so many issues that I can't deal with. And you need, and this is what really hit me, she said, you really need constant reassurance, and I can't give you that. And that's when really she taught me that the inside scars had become far more disfiguring than what was on the outside. And that's really when I realized how insecure I had become. I didn't realize that I was constantly seeking reassurance, but thank God for Dina to point it out and to be honest about it, instead of what a lot of 21-year-olds could have done, which is just to walk away, just break up with me and walk away. She was very honest, right? And that was a huge wake-up call for me, basically in a nutshell, to realize that, you know what, seeking out the next wizard surgeon who's going to fix my eye now or fix my lip or complete my nose is probably not what I should be focusing on. What I should really be focusing on is figuring out how to heal the inside. And so that's really, that was what led me down, I think, the positive path to seek out a support group, and things kind of went from there. But believe it or not, that was sort of the tail end of all the surgery, and it wasn't because I looked acceptable. It was because I realized I had to go down a new journey. I had to enter a new phase in my life, and it wasn't easy, but I was kind of excited about it, because I'll tell you, after 6 years of surgery, you don't want to keep doing it, you know?
Man, I can't imagine. Sounds painful.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a lot of broken hopes and maybe broken promises. Just this one next thing, just this one next thing.
I think that's a great point, because it kind of goes to both ways. I mean, I think the fact that I had hope and that I trusted my doctors really was key to kind of keeping a positive attitude and thinking forward in a positive way and wanting to continue with my life, right? So in many ways, that was positive, but I think you're right. At the end of the day, it was sort of like one disappointment after another, and that's what really led me to saying, okay, now I'm on my own, and I have to figure out my own path. I have to figure out how to change this predicament that I'm in a way that, you know, nobody's guiding me, nobody's advising me. I have to figure it out on my own.
Yeah.
And I just got lucky that, wow, that things kind of fell into place when I found this, you know, support community. And that wasn't easy either. I sought out many different organizations, and most of them just weren't good fits for many reasons. But finally found one that worked, and things started to improve from there.
Yeah, groups can be miraculous. I just love what happens in them. So, well, good for you for being so young and knowing enough to throw off what the, quote, authorities say and just go, okay, I'm done. I'm taking charge of my life.
Yep.
That doesn't always happen at such a young age.
No, and I wouldn't take a lot of credit for it. I honestly think, Jeanine, it is sort of a natural human instinct at some point that, you know, you just have a wake up call. I mean, to your earlier question, something wakes you up and you just know that you've got to make a change. You don't know what it's going to be. And I think we talked a little bit about this the other day. I think a lot of it is and I talk a lot about this to people, is you just have to be open-minded. You have to be alert and attentive and aware of everything that's around you, because I think, you know, you never know what's going to be around the corner. You never know where the inspiration is going to come from to change your life. And fortunately, I think I was a pretty open-minded person and willing to explore. And thank God I was, because I entered a realm where there's nobody there that I knew, right? It wasn't mm-hmm. like my friend went with me or my parents went with me. I wanted to do this on my own, so.
Wow. You wanted to do it on your own.
I did, because I'll tell you why. I think at a certain point, you can only talk to your family and your friends about certain, you know, about so many things. And I had a pretty open, honest relationship, but there's a lot of things that you don't want to share with your family and friends. Your deep, you know, at least at that age, your deep, you know, darkest feelings, you know, because you don't want to burden them. You don't want them to think, oh my God, what's wrong with him? You know, I was protecting them, I guess. And so I didn't want to really honestly tell them how crappy I felt about myself. And when you go into an environment that's just with people that you don't know, it's much easier, right? Because I kind of felt like I had nothing to lose here. These people don't know me. And I can always walk out and, you know, walk away if I need to. But why not give it a try?
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned some other turning points. Is there any others of significance that you'd like to share with us? That sounds like the biggie.
Yeah. Let's see. I mean, I think the ultimate one, and though I talk about Dina as the most liberating, I think probably if I want to say the most significant, it was really meeting my wife, Sue, and that was 25 years ago. And, quickly, basically what happened was we had two dates together before the topic of what happened to me even came up in a conversation. So that told me a lot about her, that she obviously wasn't really that concerned about whatever happened to me, but she cared about who I was as a person. She was more interested in learning about who I was as a person. And so that really was the most significant, because I felt like she accepted me for who I was and to this day has never asked me to change. So she's been my true partner.
Oh, that's lovely. And I was thinking this when you were speaking about Dina, too, of being your first love after this disfigurement, if that's what we want to call it, your first opportunity to just be loved for who you were. I mean,
exactly.
I think when we're young and, you know, homecoming prince or whatever it is that we do, the awards and accolades we get when we're young, we kind of can take on a self-image or self-worth on those things. But then when those are all taken away and we really still feel loved, I think that's where love gets real.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, despite whatever happened in the end with her, she did learn that, you know, she was a critical turning point in my life. And so to this day, we're still very close. In fact, she and her husband came out, and me and my wife met him in San Francisco and went to dinner. And so, I mean, we still see him if I'm in Chicago or she's out here. So it's
nice.
Pretty neat because, you know, I think it's important to, you know, let people know that they had that impact. She had no idea. And, you know, I was just so grateful for it.
Yeah. So what are some of your takeaways from this experience? I mean, I think we go through these things and often we say, oh, it's life's better now because this happened to me. Do you have any of those sort of takeaways?
Absolutely. I would say it's a gift. I mean, I think you probably hear that from a lot of people, but from people on the outside, they kind of look at you like, are you crazy? So it's not that I would wish it on anybody. I wouldn't wish what happened to me on my own worst enemy, but I think that it really enabled me to look inward and grow, force myself to kind of grow in ways that maybe I never would have, right? And so there was many blessings in the experience. And, you know, I think that's true for anybody that goes through an adversity that survives it. You know, I think there's just so many learnings that we get out of it. And I do believe that, you know, 9 times out of 10, you will be a better person for that adversity. Obviously,
mm-hmm.
you have to go through many tough, you know, roads to get there. But that's kind of a important thing for people just to think about in their depths, which is never easy to do. But I think
mm-hmm.
we can all end up in a far better way than we were before because we learned so much about ourselves and what we're capable of. But you know, I think there's also a lot that I learned and what I would, you know, refer to as, you know, my survival kit, things like that that I try to
impart.
Tell us about
that.
Yeah, because I think. You know, just talking about my personal experience is one thing, but, you know, a lot of people will ask, well, what can you share with me that would help me through whatever crisis I have?
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to go through that if you want.
Yeah, I'd love to know what your toolkit is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, there's a number of things, so I don't want to go through a litany of too many things to create, you know, too long of a list here. But I do think, you know, some of the things I learned was, okay, quickly that I learned were, you know, you got to surround yourself with positive people. Nobody really has time for negativity in our lives. Life is too short. It doesn't help you to move forward. So I got pretty good at sort of gravitating toward positive-minded people and steering away from others. So that helped me to kind of change relationships that I might have had that I may not have really addressed had something not happened
mm-hmm.
to me. You know, because you end up
mm-hmm.
in these relationships over time, and it's just, they're just there, and you just kind of keep having them unless something changes it. I think really the key turning points for me was you know, for me anyway, I had a very strong faith, religious faith that gave me strength and courage to get through my ordeal. I think we talked a little bit about trust, but I do think trust and teamwork were a big part of my survival kit. I mean, I trusted certain people around me to help me get through this, but I also did trust my medical team, and I think the confidence and the trust that I had in them enabled me to keep that hope throughout the entire process. And I think that was important. Now, at my age, if this happened to me, would I be as trusting to the medical team? You know, maybe not. But so I was kind of blessed that maybe it happened at an age when you're a little bit naive. But I think that trust is important. So it's you know, finding people in your life that you trust and distancing yourself from people that you don't trust is important. I think one thing that really helped me get focused on the future, which was therapeutic, mm-hmm. was just setting goals, you know, being really focused and setting goals for myself, which was somewhat easy to do because I didn't have a huge distraction. It wasn't like my phone was ringing off the hook from females saying, hey, you want to get together? You know, I didn't have, my social life changed dramatically. So I became very focused on, okay, what do I want to achieve in my own personal and professional life? So a lot of goal setting. And that really, I think, became critical in terms of helping me rebuild my confidence. Because every time you hit one or achieve one, you feel so much better about yourself. And I think that whole positive thinking, you know, combined with prayer, if you will, is a great recipe. So just trying to focus on the positive, being practical and you know, having some reality, but not thinking of all the negatives. You know, mm-hmm. life balance, kind of the eating right, sleeping right, exercising, all those kind of things became really important for me. And at that age, that was a big adjustment, right, because I had been living not a very balanced life. I was just doing whatever I wanted to do and mm-hmm. not even being conscious of kind of giving myself the benefit of having balance in my life. Mm-hmm. Group therapy we talked about. And then the last thing I would say that was really, really key for me, Ginny, was visualization. That sort of ties into, in some ways, positivity or positive thinking, but I employed a lot of visualization. I still do it today. And I think that was my own form of therapy that I use really frequently. And I always encourage people to do it. Some people, you know, just don't feel that it's the right thing for them, and that's fine. I always encourage people to try it.
What kind of things did you visualize?
Well, you know, whenever I was nervous or anxious or concerned about a procedure or about a recurrence, which would happen because I had recurrences, I would just try to lie down and just imagine myself in a place that I really liked being. And so back in those days, I backpacked a lot. And so I would go up to the Trinity Alps up in Northern California, this beautiful area, and I would just visualize that, imagine myself being up there with my backpack on, hiking along a beautiful trail through the woods, and then just kind of coming upon a clearing, and I'd just imagine seeing, you know, aspen trees and the leaves fluttering in the wind. And I'd imagine myself coming around a turn in the trail and seeing straight ahead of me a big waterfall. And so mm-hmm. I would just concentrate on walking toward that waterfall. And then I would just immerse myself. I would imagine literally approaching that waterfall, walking right underneath it, standing under it, and I would just visualize this crisp, clean, you know, refreshing mountain water just careening over my head and kind of flushing any negativity, any malignancy, anything out of my body, and just washing it down the stream. And I would do this for, it's sort of a form of meditation in a way, very, very different in some ways, but I would just do that for like 10 minutes, and it always calmed me down and soothed me, but it always kind of left me refreshed. And I mean, you know, there's so many use cases for visualization that I think are just off the charts proof that it can help you if you're open to it, right? I mean, there's people that, you know, there's like basketball teams, right, where a coach will say, okay, six guys, I want you guys to practice shooting free throws after practice for whatever, a half an hour. The other six guys go home and sit in your room and visualize making those free throws. I mean, and the results are pretty amazing on some of these examples of those where the ones that practice visualizing were more focused than those that were just standing on the court shooting. Even though they
That's
weren't actually physically
experiments.
Doing it, you know? It's an interesting
Right. Well, it's got to change the energetics around something.
Mm-hmm.
Up the vibration, if you will. Something like that.
Yeah.
turn it, right, something more positive. I mean, I would think, I mean, I don't know, I'm just kind of gathering this, but it seems like a Cancer couldn't survive in a high energy field. So it seems like as we change that, that it's sort of like, a certain plant can't survive in lemon juice or something,
right.
You know? It's like
right.
if we change the terrain, the thing can't live there. And that speaks to being able to do that on an energetic level. So that's
yeah.
very cool. Yeah, I didn't know if you were talking about visualizing, you know, how your life could be or visualizing.
Oh, yeah, I did that too.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I mean, I would visualize in many ways. So that was kind of didn't always pan out from a reconstruction standpoint, but I would lie down and imagine, you know, where I was going to be in my life. And I think that helped me definitely on the goals, the goal setting kind of stuff, because mm-hmm. that's a big part of, I think, at least for me, how I set and work toward goals in my own life. You know, it's just I visualize being in that place, having achieved that. And then I think it helps you, okay, so what do I need to do to get there? What can I do every single day to help me to get to that goal? And I think visualization is a big part of that for me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of made this stuff up, right? I didn't I sort of read books about it later because I wanted to learn how I could optimize or improve. But a lot of it was just, you know, natural things that I thought about that I felt good about when I did them. And so I just kept doing them.
Yeah, right. Well, it sounds like it works. And I noticed through doing these interviews that a common thread is gratitude. You know, looking on the positive. It's like almost everyone I have talked to has mentioned that in some way.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it just makes sense. I mean, what we focus on grows, right? So focusing on the positive, it's a key from everyone I've talked to. So.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. So what would you tell us about what life is like for you today after you made this shift and you did the work around the internal scars,
mm-hmm.
Where's your life at now? Have you turned this around?
I think, you know, I feel like I'm in a pretty good place. I have, you know, I've kind of taken control of my life, if you will. And I think that's really important for everybody to try to take control and not let, you know, putting yourself in the driver's seat and not letting someone else set the agenda for you. So I feel very grateful and all of that I've been able to get to a place where I kind of control my life now in terms of what I do for a living, how I live my life, the things I want to do. I'm very content in that regard, but I have, you know, many things that I still want to achieve, and I think life is a ongoing journey. So for now, things are going well, and you know, I'll probably change things up as, you know, sort of my interests change, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's fairly balanced now, and that was a big goal for me. So, you know, but yet very regimented in many ways, and that just works for me. Being regimented helps me kind of stay happy and content, you know, just sort of having, you know, I get up at 4:30 every morning and I work out every morning, and that really recharges me for the day. I work a long day, and late at night I play the guitar. And so having outlets and things like that I think are really important, because it's really easy to get ground up in life's, you know, daily things,
mm-hmm.
right? But,
yeah,
you know, an
yeah.
interesting anecdote, though, for you to that question that
uh-huh.
you asked is, it just occurred to me, you know, when we started and I talked about how, you know, I noticed children pointing at me and staring at me. Well,
mm-hmm.
after I had done all the work on trying to rebuild myself, what I found many years later was that little children and kids stopped looking at me. Now, I don't look any different, Jeanine. In fact, I probably look worse, right? Because now I'm losing my hair. So my scars are even, you know, more evident. But I think it's all about how you carry yourself. And I think if you carry yourself with more confidence, people are less prone to sort of look at you in critical ways, maybe. You know, maybe they just notice that some, you know, as you walk down the street, someone is carrying themselves with confidence and they leave you alone, if you will. I don't know, but I'll tell you, when I was in college and dealing with this, I was approached by lots of strange people that I think had ulterior motives because they thought that I was, you know, weak. I walked with my head down. You know what I mean? I clearly wasn't a confident person. And so I just think it's really interesting that, you know, now I can go into a Starbucks, stand in line, and there's a three-year-old that will look right at me, and I'm shocked. You know, it's like, why didn't that kid notice me? Now, it still happens, right? I mean, I still have those confrontations, and I shouldn't call them confrontations. They're not. But it's just interesting that it's not as noticeable. Maybe it's just not as noticeable to me. I'm not as aware or concerned about it.
Yeah. Well, two thoughts come as I'm listening to you. Is one, maybe you needed all those people to look at you to do the internal work.
Yeah.
And two, it's a little bit like, you know, how dogs can sense when someone's afraid of them.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah, you hit the nail on the head on that one.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Right. And both of those, actually, to help point you to the internal work and the confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I can hear that in you. I mean, you know, asking what life is like for you today, it's probably for you like being a fish in water, that you have this level of confidence, right? But I expect that to be on the list. So I can hear it in you, but it's interesting that you didn't say that. But
today, did I just say what?
Really, how confident you are, that your self-confidence is back.
Yeah.
I guess that's, you kind of have throughout the whole thing, you know, the whole talk that we've been doing, but I hear it in you. It's like, I don't know, if you didn't tell us about this disfigurement, if you will, I wouldn't know by the way you carry yourself or talk or,
yeah.
You know, you're just really a motivated, courageous human out there doing your deal on the planet. It's awesome.
Well, thank you. I think, you know, just going back to your question in terms of life now, I mean, I think the other thing I'm grateful for is that I can use that experience to help other people. And because I have such kind of a rare condition, I do get contacted fairly frequently because of the internet has opened us to the entire world. So even though I have something that's rare with the internet, you know, your rare things aren't so rare because there's people all over the United States and the world for that matter that reach out with issues similar to mine and how do I deal with it. And, you know, so it's nice that at least I can lend that experience in some way, shape, or form to try to help them. So that's great. And thank God that people have an avenue to reach people, you know, because in the old days you didn't. If you were, you know, in a hospital somewhere in the middle of nowhere, there was nobody that had your experience, right?
Right. So when you're helping them in that way, you just share your experience and how you overcame it?
I just share with them. A lot of them just don't really – I feel like a lot of people that contact me, they're at that point where they don't know how to proceed. Like they're scared. They don't know what choices to make. They don't know what doctors to go to. They're kind of struggling with – how to make decisions, right? They're overwhelmed is probably the best way to say it. They've been confronted with something that they were never prepared for. They've gone to a doctor who's told them, you know, your nose is going to be removed or something. And they panic and they don't know, do I act? Do I continue to get opinions? If so, who do I go to? You know, and I think when you're in a panic state, you're not really all that rational and you don't think methodically through how to solve something is easy as we do when we're in a more calm state.
Sure. Oh, of course.
So when they approach me, I'm very careful, Janine, because I really worry sometimes that I'm going to say the wrong thing. And I know people are very fragile, because I know I was. And so I'm never posing as a therapist or as an expert or anything like that, other than just somebody that had an experience. And anything I can do to kind of help them, I try to do. And so that's great, because there are generally these people will come back to me and update me on the progress. And many times it's good progress. You know, sometimes it's not so good, but.
Wow. Well, thank you, Terry. We have filled the time.
I
appreciate you sharing all of this with us, and I'd love to hear your courage and your self-confidence that's back, and that you're being you in the world and being loved for you in the world.
Well, thank you for the great conversation. And, thanks for doing what you're doing, bringing, many other compelling and challenging stories to the table for so many people. I think it's a great thing that you're doing to help people in an even bigger way. So kudos to you.
Yeah, thanks, Terry. I'm enjoying the heck out of doing these interviews. It's just amazing to me. All these courageous people that are in the world. You know, we hear about the crummy stuff of people in the world. We don't often hear the good stuff. So
that's right.
This is just beautiful.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing all the other stories and learning from those as well.
Yeah, good. Yeah, just sign up and you can get them. Okay. So thanks for being here. And until next time, everybody, we're signing off. Bye now.
Bye-bye.